Chapter 9. Epler Vein. The Malarni have marched, Kimoriel told Gromph, the two of them in the Archmage's suite at the Host Tower. In force, all of them, and House Hunsrin beside them, I expect. When? Gromph demanded. And where have you been? He was feeling especially edgy this day, with whispers all about Luskan of an approaching hostile fleet, and the news from the south of the advance of demon hordes. I was sent to speak with Priestess Ashala. That was 10 days ago. What she hinted to me required confirmation, and so I sought confirmation, but not any that could be found on this plane of existence. You went to the Illithid hive mind, Gromph stated. Kimoriel nodded. Over the disposition of puny matron Jindia Malarn, the great wizard asked incredulously. Does she make you so unsettled that you run to the Mind Flayers? Would you like me to find her and destroy her? Kimoriel's expression did not change in the face of Gromp's sarcasm, or the great wizard's boast, which, under normal circumstances, would be a perfectly reasonable one. Well? The agitated Gromph prompted. Arachna Chinin Lihi Elders, Kimoriel replied. Matron Jindia is not alone. Gromph stared curiously at the diminutive psionicist for a few heartbeats, replaying the strange word in his thoughts. It was in an old language, older than he, older than Menzo Berenzon. His eyes widened as he at last deciphered it. A retriever? Jindia has been granted a retriever. Gromph paused and took a deep and steadying breath, then shook his head. You are certain? Kimoriel didn't blink. Then it was not Loth who brought Zacnephane back from his eternal sleep, no, Gromph reasoned. And now the Spider Queen will have him back, and she has chosen Matron Jindia Malarn as her spear? He shook his head again. Zacnephane, yes. It must be Zacnephane. It is an old word, Kimoriel replied. Perhaps I misspoke. Then take better care, Gromph scolded. Do not throw such a prospect as a retriever. Arachna Chinin, Lihi, Eldernai, Kimoriel corrected, the proper way to pluralize the demonic constructs. Elder Nye, Gromph echoed breathlessly. Plural? Two, Kimoriel confirmed. Then Loth is truly with her, said Gromph. And we must consider that our lives and allegiances. We do not know that it is Loth at all, Kimoriel interrupted. Then who? Gromph said dismissively, but the question slammed back against him before Kimoriel had even responded. There is another demon lord, who titles himself the Prince of Demons, who is not pleased, the psionicist reminded him. Demogorgon. The Archmage realized, brought to the material plane by Gromph and destroyed in its corporeal form through the power of Menzo Berenzon, channeled through the might of the Illithid hive mind, channeled, in no small part, by these very same two drow. You assume the targets to be Zacnephane and possibly Driz Dawerdon, of course, Kimoriel said, but there are others who have gained the enmity of demons powerful enough to create retrievers. I find it unlikely that Drizzt is so hunted, though Matron Jindia surely loathes him since Loth had him in the tunnels of Damara and did not destroy him. Perhaps they are both for Zacnephane. Now it was Gromp's turn to shake his head. You cannot aim two such beasts at the same target, for they would attack each other for interference, so singularly are they focused on one task alone. Gromp played all angles out in his thoughts. Matron Jindia was leading this charge. That was the only thing giving him hope here, that he was not one of the targets. Jindia hated Drizzt and Jarlaxle, and the human Entreri, for they three had attacked her in her house and had murdered her only daughter, with Entreri's awful dagger, so said the whispers, and so she could not be resurrected. But would Jindia, would Loth waste a retriever on the likes of a mere human? Grumpf didn't think that likely. "It is not Artemis Entreri," Kimoriel said to him, an unsubtle reminder that the psionicist was reading his thoughts. "We must learn who, then," Grumpf demanded, growing angry. "It must be confirmed. Did you learn anything among the Mind Flayers?" "The Hive Mind does not exist to answer my questions on my timetable," he replied. "Press them." "Press? One does not press illithids." "Need I remind you that it was Kimoriel who brought the power of the Hive Mind to bear against Demogorgon? It is quite possible that these unstoppable golems are here for you." Kimoriel shrugged again. "You will flee to the illithids if that is the case," Grumpf accused. "As would, as will Grumpf if he learns similarly." "This is no play in which I wish to partake," the Archmage said. "We must learn the alliances behind this rise of darkness. Who granted the Arachna Chinin Lihi Eldernai, and why?" "Whoever it was, and for whatever target, our world has changed, Archmage," Kimoriel stated. And to that Grumpf could only nod his agreement. If either of these beasts had Grumpf as its target, he would spend the coming decades, centuries even, in constant flight, plane-walking, unless and until he was caught or somehow found a way to defeat that which was virtually unbeatable and unstoppable. Penelope Harpel crawled onto the side of her large bed in her comfortable chambers at the Host Tower. She paused and stared at her lover's naked back, huge and strong, thick, but hard as granite, and with clear defining lines separating the many muscles. It seemed to Penelope that if he stood and bent forward, arms wide to either side, you could put the whole world on that back, and he would hold it aloft. The woman waited a moment longer before she crawled up behind him as he sat on the bed, near the bottom, legs crossed before him and seemingly unaware that she had returned. Wolfgar had a lot on his mind, she knew. The news from the south, from Gontalgrim, where his adoptive dwarven father was king and where many of his dearest friends resided, was not promising. And Bleeding Vines, the village he had helped build with his friend Regis, had been utterly sacked, the vineyards torn asunder, the tram station to the causeway ruined. And Wulfgar had been here through all of that sudden assault and the ensuing press on Gontalgrim, visiting Penelope, wanting to share her bed. All seemed relatively secure in Gontalgrim at the moment, at least, and Brunner had sent word through the magical portal for Wulfgar to remain in Luskan as Brunner's emissary. That, too, had weighed heavily on this warrior, Penelope understood. He wanted nothing more than to go through that gate and join the fight on the front lines beside his friends. He wouldn't disobey King Brunner on this, however, and so he had returned to Penelope. That thought, that Wulfgar had sought comfort and distraction with her, sent shivers down the woman's spine, particularly now as she looked at his huge and chiseled body, a body that was somewhere around 20 years of age, though the man's consciousness was much older than that, older than Penelope by far. She was closer to 50 than 40, with gray beginning to show in her dark hair, and a few more lines in her face, particularly around the eyes, from all the squinting she did when studying spell books and old scrolls. She was still quite strong and healthy, though thicker than she liked in a few places, and not as firm in others as she had once been. She didn't really care too much about all that, but it felt good to know that she could still turn the eye of a man like Wulfgar. He kept coming back to her bed, eagerly, happily. She crawled over to kneel behind him and brought her hands to either side of his neck, digging in her thumbs to massage the corded bands of muscle that ran to his shoulders. "My magnificent man," she said. "Why are you here in my bed once more?"
"Why wouldn't I be?"
he responded, bringing his left hand up and across to place it atop her right. "Is there a woman on the Sword Coast who wouldn't open for you? Is there a young and pretty girl who would not love to be safely enwrapped in your strong arms?" As she asked, She ran her hands down over his shoulders to his giant biceps.
And yet you are here, with me.
Wulfgar gave a little laugh.
Penelope Harpel, the grande dame of the Ivy Mansion, doubts herself?
He swiveled his head to let her see his incredulous look.
Few things surprise me, woman, but yes, I am surprised.
Not a doubt, she returned with a playful slap on his shoulder. Merely simple honesty.
She shuffled around the side of him to better look into his crystal blue eyes. Ah, those eyes. Even Wulfgar's eyes spoke of the startling and wonderful contrasts of this man. He was dark and he was light, hard and strong, but oh so gentle.
You are a young man, she said. And I am not a young woman.
I was a century and 4 years when I was killed by a yeti, Wulfgar reminded her with a sincere and warm laugh.
Yes, but you were reborn, and given youth and strength and all the beauty that comes with them. You could have almost any woman, but here you are. Why?
Epler Vayan, Wulfgar answered after a brief pause.
Epler.
Penelope, too, paused and considered the root of the language. She knew most of the dialects in the north and recognized this as an Uthgard barbarian phrase, certainly. She became even more confused as she did sort it, though, and it showed on her face.
Trail apples, Wulfgar said.
You think me dear, Pooh?
I think you honest, Wulfgar replied. Not just to others, but to yourself. I think you wonderfully and refreshingly selfish.
The compliments just flow from your pretty lips, Penelope answered with a grin and a shake of her head.
She leaned back from the side of his shoulder and looked at him a bit sidelong.
Perhaps selfish is the wrong word, but I do not mean it as an insult, Wulfgar told her. Quite the opposite. Penelope Harpel knows what she wants and moves to get it. You are honest with yourself and brave enough to proclaim that honesty to all around you. You tear free the bindings of convention and tradition and signs.
Signs?
Aye, said Wulfgar, nodding and gaining clarity in his own thoughts now. Signs. They are everywhere, written or spoken, rules and laws, and some matter. And some are there because they are there, because somewhere, sometime, someone put them there.
Like trail apples.
Wulfgar laughed.
Exactly. And no one has had the courage or the sense to tear them down. But you don't step in them, no. There is no pretense to Penelope. There is no hidden Penelope. Do you not understand, my beautiful and wonderful friend? You are not just who I desire. You are what I desire of myself.
Penelope spent a heartbeat trying to digest that. Am I your lover or your teacher? She asked.
Yes, and more, Wulfgar proclaimed.
He playfully reached down and touched the inside of Penelope's knee as she knelt beside him, then ran his fingers lightly, so lightly. Perhaps they weren't even touching her, but just calling to her skin up the inside of her thigh.
You are my truth, he said earnestly. You are my hero.
Penelope swung around before him and straddled him, never letting go of his intense gaze. She gasped as he thrust forward to join them together.
But there are so many pretty girls, she said, and now she was just playing with him. Do you not wish to?
Have you ever told me that I should not?
Penelope pulled her head back and stared at him slyly.
Are you jealous? Wulfgar asked with a playful grin.
She returned the look.
Only if I am not there with you, she teased,
and came forward to kiss him. And they held the kiss all through their lovemaking, a long and single kiss, then melted together to the blankets, to fall asleep in each other's arms.
Ringing bells awakened Wulfgar and Penelope sometime later.
What?
The big man asked, and when he realized the location of the bells, right outside Penelope's door, he laughed.
Of course,
he said to her, as she pushed herself up on her elbows and shook the hair out of her face.
You would not accept a simple knock upon your door.
That is not my doing, the woman assured him. She rolled over on her back, sat up, and pulled the bed covers up.
May we enter, lady? Gronf Banry asked from beyond the door.
Wulfgar was confused. Penelope's chambers, like those of many of the great wizards housed here at this most unusual abode, were extra planar, pockets of extra-dimensional space much larger than the physical area they inhabited of the host tower. But it sounded to him as if Gromf was right outside the physical door, despite the fact that this physical door was not even on the same plane of existence as the Archmage at the time. Or was it?
Wizards are confusing creatures, the man grumbled.
Enter, Penelope answered and waved her hand. The door swung open, revealing two of Wulfgar's least favorite people, Gronf Banry and Camuriel O'Blodra. With only a very few exceptions, wizards unnerved Wulfgar because he didn't understand them, but compared to Camuriel, Gronf would be a welcome dinner companion. The two walked right up to the foot of the bed, Camuriel looking straight at Wulfgar and offering a clearly derisive snort.
We've trouble brewing, Gromf said.
We've heard, said Penelope.
You've heard of Bleeding Vines and the press on Gontalgrim, but we are speaking of a different event, Camuriel corrected.
There is a fleet bound for Lusk and a great war armada, Gromf explained. Port Last was sacked, we believe, though there has been no word directly from the town, and the fleet sailed out from there to the north.
For Luskin, Penelope said.
So it would seem. High Captain Kurth is rallying the ships to sail out to meet the challenge, that we might at least learn their intent,
Gromf went on.
We suspect they mean to attack straight away, but we need to know more about their disposition and their strength.
Penelope nodded.
I will discern all of that, Camuriel explained. And I would take you, Wulfgar, with me to guard over me.
Of course, said Penelope, clutching the blankets tight to her chest. She looked to her lover and promised,
We will stop them.
Not you, lady, Gromf told her. Him. You go home to Longsaddle.
Penelope scoffed openly at that, staring at the man angrily.
Gromf does not, she began to say.
Go to Catti Bree, lady, he interrupted, and keep her safe.
She can well keep herself safe, Penelope angrily replied, and would have gone further except that Wulfgar put his hand on her shoulder to quiet her.
What do you know?
Wulfgar demanded.
This darkness is more than you comprehend. Gromf explained, speaking more to Penelope than to Wulfgar. A great evil has come, and it is aimed and with purpose, and that purpose is for chosen people. I think it is aimed at the man Catti Bree loves most, but I cannot be certain. If that is the case, then she too might be in great danger, and so I bid you to go to her.
Catti Bree is more powerful than I, Penelope replied. If she cannot defend herself, then what am I to do?
Put the eyes from the Ivy Mansion all about, Gromf told her. And if the darkness approaches, then send her away, far away, to the ends of Faerun, to another plane even.
What are you babbling about, wizard?
Wulfgar demanded. He moved forward, the blankets falling away, showing the muscles of his arms and chest tight with tension.
Gromf ignored him.
Would you have Drizzt breathe his last, knowing that Catti Bree died before him? Knowing that their child was killed because of him? He asked of Penelope.
The tone of his voice surprised the woman, for it was filled with unexpected humanity.
Lady, go to Catti Bree and make sure that she is safe, the Archmage stated flatly.
Penelope turned to Wulfgar, both wearing expressions of confusion and trepidation. We must go, Kimoriel said to him. We must learn the truth of this armada that sails against Luskin. The ships are readying.
Wulfgar nodded.
You're going to die out there, Penelope whispered.
This is my truth,
Wulfgar quietly replied.
I hate the signs. I love you because you ignore the signs, but this I cannot ignore. The sign of friendship is one I welcome and must not, cannot ignore.
He pulled her face up to look her in the eye.
Nor can you.